Pauses and silence must be distinguished from unforced ones caused by the speaker's inability to express the thoughts or words to express them. When I say pauses and silence must be distinguished from unforced ones caused by the speaker's inability to express thoughts or words, we need to understand when there's a pause. Is it a long pause? Is it ideally a pause before or after the word? So the focus has to be, when is the pause? On which words? When is the pause? Sorry, and for which words? When are you pausing? That is most important. This is a sign of weakness. Now, why would we consider a pause a sign of weakness? Many a times, a person may pause due to lack of information. Many a times, a person may pause due to various reasons like being distracted. Many a times, a person may pause because the person may forget what he or she actually wishes to say. So this can be a problem. Now, if this is done or if this happens very often, then it can reflect as a sign of weakness. On the other hand, keeping silent, holding one's peace and deliberately not responding while having a confident and peaceful expression on the face is a sign of strength and power. You feel it is best to stay in silence at this moment. You feel it is best not to say anything which would make the situation go out of control. That kind of silence is appreciated. That kind of silence is more to show that the person has the patience, the person has the ability to sort out an issue peacefully rather than being hyper and rather than creating a situation which will get difficult for one and all. So when we talk of silence, when we talk of pauses, they are effective as far as nonverbal communication is concerned. Pause is one of the most important aspects too, because when we pause, it is actually for a purpose. At times, the pause may be unintentional. At times, the pause is at a wrong for a wrong statement. But we need to understand that the pause has to be effective and at the correct time. Sometimes silence is a really good answer. Yes, it is a fact that when required, it's best to be in silence. The facial expressions will say so much that silence will actually take over. Enthusiasm and energy with which we talk or listen inspire respect and esteem. A lively, vigorous colleague is far more communicative than a weary, exhausted one. This energy that enables the speaker to dominate over the audience can come from physical good health and spirit, mental strength and intellectual power and spiritual control. Whichever the source, enthusiasm and energy are very influential and contagious. I guess it is understood that a person who's enthusiastic, who's motivated, who's charismatic, who's having control over the words as well as the facial expressions to a great extent, can deliver an audience a speech or give a talk whereby the audience will find him or her contagious. This is because the person has that ability to ideally take over a large audience. This is because the person has that ability to ideally let the audience understand how lively and enthusiastic an individual can be. And this makes a big difference in terms of ideally noting that the speaker is having these traits and qualities which are probably easy for the audience to understand because the audience can connect to someone who is lively and enthusiastic faster. So it is very important that as individuals somewhere we have that kind of mental strength and intellectual power to give information to make our presence felt maybe without words because of the kind of personality we have. One picture is worth a thousand words. Written communication can be enhanced by using various symbols and graphics. Even the font size selected, margins allowed, or spacing of written communication add to or reduce the value of communication. Now, when we talk of font size, margins allowed, spacing, this ideally sets an impression of the person who has sent you maybe a letter, who has sent you maybe an email. Because we need to understand that a lot is conveyed about you through written communication. For example, if you have received a letter via post, then of course the way the letter is folded, is it twofold or threefold, the envelope, right, the quality of the paper, all these aspects say a lot about the sender. Drawings, pictures, symbols or photographs often convey a message succinctly which hundreds of words may not able to convey. Which hundreds of words may not be able to convey. What do we mean by this? A drawing or a picture says much more than words. A drawing or a picture conveys a lot more because there is no expression of words as such. It is a diagram. The diagram is an explanatory diagram. So it gets easier for a person to understand. Plus, such visuals are universally understood, more easily remembered, and make an immediate impact as they are easy to take in or digest. When I see a diagram, when I see a picture, it goes easily in the mind as compared to sentences or words, because probably it's visual in terms of the diagram, and the diagram says much more than words. Usually, processes are effectively conveyed using diagrams rather than words, because diagrams have the benefit of giving explanation in a direct manner as compared to words. Put up a graph or a chart and suddenly everything you are saying makes sense. Yes, it resolves half the problems. Because when we talk of graphs, charts, they are so well explained that it saves you in terms of time and effort. Graphs or charts help people understand data quickly. Whether you want to make a comparison, show a relationship, or highlight a trend, they help your audience see what you are talking about. The trouble is there are so many different types of charts and graphs that it is difficult to know which one to choose. So what is the purpose of a graph? What is the reason for you ideally to take a graph or show a graph? What is the reason for you to show this kind of a graph? All those aspects are required. Click on the chart option in your spreadsheet program and you are presented with many styles. They all look smart, but which one is appropriate for the data you have collected? So what is the kind of data you want to select? If you want to show ideally a map, and on that map you want to show areas wherever the army has been put up. So all over the map you could have green tents shown. So that kind would give benefit and an understanding to the audience that this is what you wish to convey. If you talk of ideally comparison, you could probably use a bar graph that shows that the comparison in terms of sales of cars. So 2014 saw a higher sales of cars as compared to, say, for example, 2013. That's just an example. So the comparison through bar graphs. A line graph compares two variables, say sales of vehicles by types over a period of, say, 4 years. When I say sales of vehicles by types, it means two-wheeler or four-wheeler. It allows a comparison. example, sales of four-wheelers are growing at a faster rate than those of two-wheelers. Since it reflects a trend, it also allows you to predict possible future results. So you're seeing a shift that as compared to, you know, two-wheelers, four-wheelers are doing better. Maybe a four-wheeler is more, you know, of course, today we even have four-wheelers at a very reasonable rate, which is affordable to common man, for example, the Nano. So maybe there's a shift in trend, there's a shift in probably a price. Nobody has ever manufactured a four-wheeler at this rate, which we have now in terms of a Nano. So probably also the sense of security with a four-wheeler as compared to a two-wheeler. Then, of course, we go by individualistic choice or choices. What does a person really prefer? What fits into his or her budget? What is the urgency of buying a four-wheeler or two-wheeler? And various other aspects. Okay, so in this diagram, it's shown very clearly that there is a higher demand for four-wheelers. Now, when we see this, it means that the diagram is clearly explaining so much that even if words are not used, and if we are having an interactive session, we can definitely put forward that this diagram is conveying to us that four-wheelers are doing better. A pie chart is a circular diagram that shows the percent or share of, say, each company in the total market. When we talk of a pie chart, the breakup is in terms of the percent used. Flow charts are used to indicate procedures in which alternative actions have to be taken depending on the result of the previous step. When I say alternative actions to be taken, it means that the arrows here show what was done prior and the following arrow says what will be done. Now, a flow chart ideally is used to explain the alternative actions. When I say alternative actions, that means it's like if I say A and put an arrow saying B, then I put an arrow saying C. It means this is what A does, then it goes further to B, then it goes further to C. So let us make it a bit simpler. Receipt of customer order. First, the fresh order. Okay, what is the order? You prepare an estimate in terms of sales. Then, once the estimate is done, you take approval that is this appropriate? And then you quote it to the customer. So it is more a systematic way of giving information. It is more in an orderly manner and it is well planned and put forward. If it's a repeat order, then of course, if the last price has undergone any change, if it has not, take it ideally ahead and inform the customer. If it has gone through a change in terms of pricing, then we need to inform the customer and we take it as a fresh order. So going in a systematic manner. Maps convey geographical information like transport routes, climatic conditions and distribution of population. Climatic conditions, areas where probably there's a lot of snow. So it is explained very clearly. Signs and signals are non-verbal means to communicate and express. A smile, it's a universal sign. The direction, okay, the finger pointing, it shows which direction. Then you talk of heat, for example, if there is a gas or a stove put forward somewhere, then it is expressed through this sign. Use of signs and symbols help you break the monotony of the text and keeps the reader interested in your message. However, it is necessary to remember that overuse of signs and signals can distract the reader from your main message. Too much of usage of signs and symbols can obviously break the link. So usage of signs and symbols should be as and when required. Just like we discussed silence, silence will be appropriate only and only if it is required and correct at that juncture. If you are in silence at an inappropriate time, that means when you're expected to speak up, then of course it will lead to problems. We now take the concept paralanguage. Paralanguage is the non-verbal aspect of communication. The way in which you say the words in terms of volume, pitch, speaking rate, voice quality. Paralanguage is a component of metacommunication that may modify or nuance meaning or convey emotion such as prosody, pitch, volume, intonation, etc. When we talk of paralanguage, the non-verbal aspects of communication. When we talk of paralanguage, we are talking in a manner whereby we say the intention in terms of the tone behind what is said. That means, for example, a person will say, so that gasp, that shock, that disgust, that surprise. So a form of non-verbal communication. It is sometimes defined as relating to non-phenomic properties only. We have discussed phenomenic and non-phenomenic in the previous slides. Paralanguage may be expressed consciously or unconsciously. The study of paralanguage is known as paralinguistics. While the term paralanguage is used to refer non-verbal elements of speech, it should not be confused with kinesics, whereby we are talking of study of body language. So we need to understand paralanguage is very different from kinesics. Kinesics, study of body language. This ideally is the non-verbal element of communication. Also in the previous sentence, prosody. Prosody ideally means the element of speech, the non-verbal element of speech. When we say element, the non-verbal element of speech used to modify the meaning, to convey the emotional state. When I say emotional state, maybe a person feels choked due to the loss of a loved one. So the emotional state, the choking, that is a non-verbal aspect of communication. While kinesics is non-linguistic, kinesics, body language, non-linguistic. It's focused only on body language. I mean gestures, postures. Okay? It is not necessarily related to vocal or written language. Paralinguistic information, because it is phenomenal, belongs to external speech signal. It is something which can be visible. It somewhere gives a cue or a hint. C-U-E, a hint. So when I yawn, it's a non-verbal element of communication. Maybe a person is yawning out of boredom. Maybe a person is tired. So you're giving that kind of cue or hint. The paralinguistic properties of speech play an important role in human speech communication. Now we will discuss how. There are no utterances or speech signals that lack paralinguistic properties, since speech requires the presence of a voice that can be modulated. Now when we talk of voice that can be modulated, what do we mean? The loudness or softness in terms of volume? Probably intonation, the term intonation which was used in the previous slide. What is intonation ideally? Raising or lowering the voice depending on the situation. So we talk of voice modulation. This voice must have some properties, and all the properties of a voice are as such paralinguistic. However, the distinction between linguistic versus paralinguistic applies not only to speech but to writing and sign language as well, and it is not bound to any sensory modality. When we talk of paralinguistic, let's take a yawn. Someone will yawn, that's a loud yawn. Someone will yawn, so you cannot even hear. So what are we discussing here? That in terms of paralanguage, what is it in terms of loudness or softness? The second time when I showed you how I yawned, you probably did not realize. The first time it was loud enough. So we need to understand that that's where paralinguistic differs from linguistic. Even vocal language has some paralinguistic as well as linguistic properties that can be seen. When we're talking, lip reading. So that's how vocal language has features of paralinguistic, and you're talking of paralinguistic as well as linguistic properties. Speech signals arrive at a listener's ears with acoustic properties that may allow listeners to identify location of the speaker, sensing distance and direction, for example. When I say acoustic, acoustic is of course more to do with music when we talk of the term acoustic. So what are they saying? Speech signals arrive at a listener's ears with acoustic properties. That means you can figure out someone is talking, someone is probably ideally, you know, speaking at a distance, or someone is close by and is talking aloud. The speech organs of different speakers differ in size. As children grow up, their organs of speech become larger, and there are differences between male and female adults. The differences concern not only the size but also proportions. They affect the pitch of the voice. They affect the pitch of the voice and to a substantial extent also the formant frequencies, which characterize the different speech sounds. The frequencies, right? Someone may talk like this and someone may talk like this. So it varies. The organic quality of speech has a communicative function in a restricted sense, since it is merely informative about the speaker. So when you talk of communication, what is the focus on here? The tone. But if it's paralinguistic, then we focus on other aspects of non-verbal communication. It will be expressed independently of the speaker's intention. Quality of speech depends on the situation. The quality of speech, of course, depends on what is the information, and thus we are saying what is the intention and what does the speaker want to convey to the audience. Now, if you're giving a very important speech, you may be really tired and stressed, but you cannot at that juncture yawn. So, a lot to do independently of the speaker's intention, a lot to do with that. What does the speaker want to convey when we say independent of the speaker's intention? A message may be made more or less coherent by adjusting its expressive presentation. For instance, upon hearing an utterance such as, "I drink a glass of wine every night before I go to sleep," is coherent when made by a speaker identified as an adult, but registers a small semantic anomaly when made by a speaker identified as a child. If the same statement is made by a child, it will not be acceptable. It may probably be taken in an inappropriate manner or not in a willing manner by the adults, because they will not be receptive to the statement made by a child. So, what are we trying to say? That when you are talking, or when you are portraying a verbal communication, or whether it's non-verbal communication or non-verbal aspects of communication in terms of paralanguage, how it is portrayed by an adult, it will be different when portrayed by a child. When you talk of semantic, we have said semantic barriers. When we discuss the barriers, semantic is ideally different words, or probably you can say words which are different in meaning but very often can be pronounced in a similar manner. So for example, inquiry, I-N-Q-U-I-R-Y, E-N-Q-U-I-R-Y. They both are pronounced in the same way but they mean different. I-N-Q-U-I-R-Y would mean to investigate. E-N-Q-U-I-R-Y would be to make a general inquiry. Say you want to take admission in Wellinkers. So you will make an inquiry as to what are the requirements for the MMS course, or what are the requirements for the other full-time courses. So we need to understand this kind of a statement may create a semantic anomaly. That means a kind of confusion if it's made by a child, right? One may assume that a child means to say he probably is having a thumbs up every night. It means that. A gasp or a gasp is a kind of paralinguistic respiration in the form of sudden and sharp inhalation of air through the mouth. Gasp occur from an emotion of surprise, shock or disgust, like a sigh of relief. Say you've just finished your project and you've just managed to complete it on time. Okay, a sigh, a yawn or a moan. A gasp is often an automatic and unintentional act. Gasping is closely related to sighing. They somewhere are close to each other. Non-fluencies and hesitation are part of the spoken language. If you talk of hesitation, say you were talking and very often you do, I'm not sure, so you are hesitating. Sounds like, indicate that the speaker is hesitant and not convinced about what is being said. Sounds like, ouch, uh-oh, can convey various ideas and emotions, right? If you say, probably you're thinking something for a few seconds. If you say, ouch, you may have got hurt. So, various ways to indicate. To get the complete picture, attention has to be paid to facial expressions accompanying these hesitations. To get the complete picture, attention has to be paid to the facial expressions. So, if I say, ouch, so, and if I've got hurt, ouch, so, the facial expressions will differ. Silence and long pauses too can be very effective means of non-verbal communication. Please remember, this is not a negative absence of speech, but a deliberate positive withdrawal or suspension of speech. This is very difficult means of communication, as silence is not easy, as it takes a good deal of self-control and self-confidence to be able to hold on to one's tongue for a required interval. Silence is effective if required. If not required, one has no choice and one must speak. When you talk of silence, is it appropriate to be silent at that point of time? Is it acceptable in that situation to be quiet? So, a lot to do with the situation and the reason. Let's discuss this. Nita, your group salesperson has just returned from an important sales meet with one of your major clients. She's reporting the progress at the meeting to you as a supervisor. So assume Nita has just come in and she is discussing with you as a supervisor that what was discussed in the meeting. Now, Nita is the group salesperson. She's just met one of your major clients. Even though she advises that the meeting was a great success, from her nonverbal communication, you know that is not the case. How did you decide? Because during the conversation, her hands were folded on her lap throughout her conversation. Her eyes, maybe she avoided eye contact. Now, when you avoid eye contact, chances are maybe at that juncture, you're probably not feeling comfortable to look into the eye and talk, since you know that what you will say is different probably from what has happened. That means in this case, she will say the meeting went good, but somewhere within she feels the meeting was not a success. Her tone is softer, maybe lack of confidence at that juncture. And her breathing, the breath always moves in a manner depending on your thought process and what you feel. Like if you're angry, your breath will be fast. In this case, there could be anxiety and stress for her. So the breath will not be rhythmic. It may fluctuate. So we need to understand that when we talk of nonverbal communication, your paralanguage would be maybe a gasp, but she's surprised that why did this happen? She expected the meeting to go successful. Her facial expressions, her eyes, not appropriate eye contact. So this is clearly indicating a lot. So a lot to do with nonverbal aspects of communication, and we can also include your paralanguage. Summary. We communicate by exchanging symbols to describe our ideas and experience. Language is a common symbol which we use for sharing our experience with others. Communication through words is termed as verbal communication. Communication through other symbols is called non-verbal communication. Non-verbal communication has almost instant effect because of the quicker grasp by the receiver. Non-verbal communication enhances the value of verbal communication. Non-verbal communication is easily and picked up faster by the receiver. Nonverbal communication can be conducted through gestures, eye contact, touch, sound, pause, silence, and even by clothing and appearance. Each means has its own impact. Charts, signs, pictographs, flow diagrams are used to convey data effectively. Body language includes all movements and changes that occur in the body positions. Listeners often rely more on the message conveyed by the body language rather than that conveyed by mere words. It is always possible to gain a good deal of control on body language and paralanguage and use them effectively as actors and other communicators do. We need to be very alert as far as body language is concerned. How we express it, we've got to be very careful. Self-assessment questions. So that's now certain questions. What is the significance of nonverbal communication? When we talk of nonverbal communication as discussed, we can of course also discuss paralanguage, which means we are focusing on the various attitudes of people through the nonverbal aspects of communication too. List different components of nonverbal communication and how do they enhance the impact of the message a speaker is intending to convey. Can body language convey different messages? Yes, of course. How? Provide an example. And how will you ensure that your body language is positive when you prepare for a job interview? So a lot to do with your self-confidence, a lot to do with your body language in terms of your posture, a lot to do with eye contact, a lot to do with the way you dress. That means you give an impression that it is of prime importance to you, because if you are shabbily dressed or if you're wearing wrinkled clothes, it shows and reflects on you as an individual that you're not concerned. Right? So, various forms of nonverbal communication. We have finished chapter 3. Thank you.